Class is back in session. It's time for Baptist Basics University from BaptistBasics.org. Welcome back to Baptist Basics University. I am Matthew Gage. This is lesson number 4 in our series on Bible history and customs. And today we will be looking at nations and empires. In ancient history, no kingdom or people or tribe are ever left to themselves. There's always interaction with the neighboring tribes or the people across the river or the kingdom across the sea. And these interactions play out in many ways, from peaceful trade to all-out wars to genocide. But, somebody once said, no man is an island unto himself, and no people are an island unto themselves. Even the most remote people are somehow affected and have contact with the outside world. Even today, the most isolated tribes in Amazon or Papua New Guinea, they still see airplanes. I mean, they still have some type of contact. Well, in the ancient world, when we're dealing with Bible history, of course, the Bible is, especially the Old Testament, is a story of the Jews, of the kingdom of Israel, of this people. And I can make a case that really, especially in the Old Testament, Genesis gets us from the foundation of the world to Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and Joseph and his brothers, the foundation of the nation of Israel. And then, of course, Exodus through Deuteronomy is a story about them in Egypt and leaving Egypt. And then we have, Joshua and how they got into the promised land. Then we have the history there from the judges to the kings and the chronicles. And then we have, the stories about them being conquered by the Assyrians and the Babylonians. And the whole Old Testament is just full. I mean, it is the story of the nation of Israel. But of course, the nation of Israel is not alone in the world. They have constant contact with different people and kingdoms. I'm not sure how many different, whether they be tribes or families or kingdoms or nations. There are just dozens and dozens from the tribes that inhabit the land of Canaan they have to defeat. To even go into the New Testament, all the places Paul visits, all these people have a heritage, even though it's the Roman world. There is so much backstory and history to these places and these people that he visits. So what I want to do in this lesson is I have 6 different kingdoms, 5 of which are pretty major in their impact and dealings with the nation of Israel, that I just want to look at and give you some of their history, just so you kind of know what is going on in the world, to give you a little bit broader view instead of just what's happening in Israel. And hopefully, if you've been listening to these series I've been doing, even this, if you listen to the first lesson, we talk about Bible chronology. I mean, we've laid out a broad outline of Jewish history. Well, let's look at some of the history now and talk about some of these other kingdoms, kind of what makes them unique and kind of the roles that they played with the nation of Israel. The first one we're going to look at is the nation, or the kingdom, I guess we should say, of Egypt. Egypt is a fascinating, fascinating place. Its history and culture have fascinated people for centuries. From the magnificent ruins, of the pyramids and the Sphinx, to the hieroglyphics, to the mummies, to the treasures, like the treasures they found with King Tut. I mean, it is just fascinating, this group of people. And they have a long, long history. They're probably one of the longest superpowers in the world. And in the ancient world, especially in the Old Testament time, I mean, Egypt is a power basically the entire time of the Old Testament. And so that's something quite different. When we deal with some of these other people, I mean, there comes a point you can say, boy, well, their capital was erased from history. And, you know, well, there are still some people with that name or a region or a province. But Egypt remains a force in the ancient world. I mean, from the earliest days of Jewish history up until, I mean, the Greek and Roman times, and on in even into modern times to an extent. You know, I mean, it plays a pretty big part even today, with oil, control of the Suez Canal, relationships with Israel. I mean, it's an amazing deal. Now, study of the people and the history of Egypt, really another kind of historical thing, you could tie a lot of it back to a guy you may have heard of called Napoleon. Napoleon led an expedition down into Egypt trying to conquer it, and that was a fiasco. But what he did do was he brought a bunch of scholars and professors and painters with him to kind of do this study of ancient Egypt. And they brought back a bunch of relics and artifacts and the stories and the pictures. I mean, suddenly set off a craze throughout the modern world. And, you know, that's when the modern study of Egypt really takes off. And things such as Carter finding the tomb of King Tut set off another Egyptian craze. And if you look at jewelry and stuff that was popular back in the 20s and 30s, you know, Egyptian symbols and stuff are back in vogue. I mean, it's amazing the draw and the power that the nation of Egypt has. And a lot of that's, you know, its climate is very conducive to, you know, things being preserved, whether they're, you know, old mud bricks or you know, paper and different things like that. The mummies being preserved. I don't know what it is, but Egypt is just a fascinating, fascinating place. And almost everyone will know about, you know, pyramids or camels or, you know, the Nile River, Cleopatra, the pharaohs. Almost everybody knows something that has to do with the nation of Egypt. So, the first mention of Egypt, and I've just kind of thrown this in for giggles. I just did some quick search online. The first reference I found is Genesis chapter 12, verse 10. And Egypt is mentioned in, I think, just doing a little search on there, over 500 verses in the Bible. So, I mean, it plays a pretty major role, especially in Old Testament times. Now, when was Egypt settled? It appears it was settled shortly after the flood. Now, I'm going to throw this out. A lot of the dates I'm giving you are kind of the traditional dates that are commonly accepted. They don't quite match the chronology that I've used. I think it's a little too spread out. It's following actually a historian from the 4th century BC named Manetho. I think I talked a little bit about him in the first lesson of this series. But I think it's a little bit too spread out. I don't think it's all that reliable, but everybody has no trouble accepting that as good chronology and has every bit of trouble, you know, accepting the Bible. You know, it's kind of funny that way. But regardless, we can divide, and this is actually based on some of his work. We can divide the kingdom in the history of Egypt into a series of kingdoms and dynasties and such. You have the Old Kingdom. This would be 2686 to 2181 BC, you know, give or take something there. This is when the kingdom really begins to grow in power. The Sphinx and the pyramids of Giza, all that stuff is built actually during this time. So a lot of the iconic structures from Egypt are actually built in its earliest kingdom. Followed by what's called the First Intermediate Period, 2181 to 1991 BC. And there's a lot of drought. There's a decentralized government. It's actually kind of what we think of as Egypt is split into various different areas. Next comes the Middle Kingdom. This is 2134 to 1690 BC. And now there's a lot of debate about exactly how, you know, the Bible account fits with, you know, Egypt, and I mean, exactly, you know, who was the who was Pharaoh, you know, when Moses was around, and, you know, when exactly did the Exodus take place? When exactly did, you know, did Joseph go there? Well, a lot of people believe that it was during the time of the Middle Kingdom that the children of Israel settled into Egypt. We have next the second intermediate period, which is 1674 to 1549 BC. This is marked by a group called the Hyksos or Hyksos. I don't know how you say it, H-Y-K-S-O-S. I've heard it a couple different ways. They are a foreign. They're a Semitic people that come in and rule. They conquer. A couple things that they had that kind of was revolutionary for the time as far as warfare. They have the composite bow and the chariot. And their rule was finally overthrown by a guy named Ramses II. Which, okay, if you're following on with what I'm saying with Israel going here, you know, a foreign invader like the Hyksos probably would have been very friendly to the Jews and given them a little prestige. Well, when the Egyptians overthrow the rule, they're going to suppress the foreigners. So, you know, this is when, you know, it talks about a new king coming up, not knowing Moses. It's possible that, I actually have that in the wrong one, Ramses II. Sorry. If I've mentioned anything about Ramses II, excuse me, I copied and pasted that into the wrong place. But anyway, I really ought to, like, proofread these things before I start recording. So, forget anything I said about Ramses II if I said anything. But these foreign rulers, if they were, you know, there, it's very possible that the Israelites would gain favor when the Egyptians rose up and threw them out. They would have suppressed the foreigners, like the, especially because, I mean, if they're Semitic people, they have a common ancestry with the Jews, they would have linked the Hyksos with the Jews. So when the next period begins, the new kingdom, this would have been when the, you know, the new king arises that doesn't know Joseph. He doesn't care. He just knows there's these foreign people. He doesn't like them. And, you know, so we'd see the oppression given onto, the oppression on the Jews. The new kingdom, 1549 to 1069 BC. This is where Ramses II fits in. And this would he would rule between 1279 and 1213 BC. Ramses the Great. He built all kinds of statues of himself, kind of a vain guy, and is a very of all the pharaohs, probably one of the most powerful. And it fits into this new kingdom period. This is possibly the time when the Exodus took place. Okay. Next is the third intermediate period. This is 1069 to 653 BC, and this period is marked by a bunch of foreign invaders and foreigners kind of in control, a series of them, and kind of the kingdom being split, decentralized. There's a late period that then follows, which is 672 to 332 BC. Begins kind of the early stages. Egypt was under control of the Assyrians, who we're going to talk about later. The Babylonians underneath Nebuchadnezzar, we'll talk about later, invades in 567 BC. And then finally in 525 BC, Persia comes in and invades. So we have a series of these, you know, other foreign powers coming in and invading and conquering Egypt. The late period ends 332 because that's when Alexander the Great shows up. We'll talk a little bit more about him when we talk about the Greek Empire. It's amazing. As we keep going, we're going to keep seeing these same empires, you know, keep interacting with each other. But Alexander the Great comes along, conquers. After his death, his kingdom, which is much of the Mediterranean world, is split up among his generals. One of the guys named Ptolemy gets control of Egypt and establishes what's called the Ptolemaic dynasty, which was around from around 332 to 30 BC. And this dynasty is really crazy. They're foreigners. They have like Greek blood, but they kind of keep some of the traditional Egyptian stuff going on. There's a lot of weird things about them. They're very fanatical about keeping, you know, kind of power in the family. So brothers would marry sisters and stuff like that. A lot of inbreeding went on. And So by the time, you know, some of the later rulers, you know, had serious deformities going on because of all the inbreeding. Most famous of the Ptolemaic rulers is going to be Cleopatra, otherwise known as Cleopatra the Seventh. She's not the first, she's the seventh, who reigned with various co-rulers, her brothers and stuff, from 51 to 30 BC. And yes, that's a Cleopatra that, you know, had relations, shall we say, with Julius Caesar, Mark Antony, and, you know, committed suicide. That's that Cleopatra. That after her death is when Rome comes in and becomes a power, and they're a power from about 30 BC to about 646 AD. And this is after the Battle of Actium, where Mark Antony and Cleopatra lose to Octavian. And, you know, shortly thereafter, Egypt becomes a Roman province. If you want to follow on, I didn't go too much further into history past, like, New Testament times. But Christianity arrives mid-first century. And finally, the kind of the end of the Roman period is when the Muslims, the Arabian Muslims, conquer in 646. And basically, Egypt has been, you know, Muslim since then. Okay, the next empire I want to talk about is probably the less known and one I don't want to spend a whole lot of time with, just kind of an interesting story, and that is the Hittites. And the Hittites, for years, were one of the quote-unquote proofs that the Bible was inaccurate, because when the Bible talked about this kingdom and this very powerful people, everybody said, well, there's no evidence of the Hittites. You know, there's no one at that time period in that area. You know, there's no way there could have been Hittites. Well, lo and behold, a little over 100 years ago, did a little digging, and archaeologists discovered, hey, there were some people called the Hittites that were pretty doggone powerful. And so, you know, starting around 1900, somewhere in there, people begin to realize, oh, wow, hey, the Bible's right. So, but so it's kind of an interesting story with the Hittites, and a lot of people that talk about, you know, the accuracy of the Bible like to tell this story. So I thought kind of throw it in there for fun. In fact, it wasn't until like 1915, a guy actually got around to deciphering their language and stuff. And now we can read a lot of their inscriptions. But anyway, the Hittites were based kind of in what's modern Turkey, the region, you know, kind of known as Anatolia. And about the 14th century BC was kind of when they were at the height of their power. So, I mean, they're a pretty old kingdom. They're kind of, they're done away with and gone, you know, by the time the Romans and everybody else comes around. First mention of the Bible, Genesis 15, verse 20. Over 40 verses in the Bible mention the Hittites. We can divide their history into a series of kingdoms. We have the Old Kingdom, which is 1750 to 1500 BC, roughly. Interesting note is that they actually conquered and they sacked Babylon. They went in, you know, took a bunch of stuff and left in 1531 BC. The Middle Kingdom, 1500 to 1430 BC, is this kind of in between stage. The kingdom was very weak. There's a lot of constant threat from the outside and battles and stuff. So they kind of separate out that little period of history. And then what's called the New Kingdom, which is 1430 to 1180 BC, which is really kind of the heyday of their power. Neat little example of them is the Battle of Kadesh, which is between the Hittites and the Egyptians, which was in 1274 BC. And a neat little thing is we actually have a copy of the treaty that was signed after that. They found it, dug it up, and translated it, so you can actually look up and see that treaty. And evidently, the Hittites were one of the first groups to actually do treaties. Kind of an interesting little side note in their history. Then their last little stage of history is what's called the Neo-Hittite Kingdoms, or Syrian, Syro-Hittite Kingdoms, 1160 to about 700 BC. And these were like little independent state kingdoms that kind of had the Hittite heritage, but were really, really more under the rule of Assyria. And they weren't even like the traditional region of the Hittites. They were kind of closer to Assyria anyway, but they're kind of the last little bit of the Hittites. And finally, I mean, by the time Alexander the Great comes around, the Hittites, their language and everything else is basically you know, on its way out are gone, and their heritage and history is pretty much lost for centuries after that. Okay, our next kingdom is the Kingdom of Assyria. And Assyria is kind of would be in modern day Iraq, along the upper area of the Tigris River. The name comes from its original capital, Assur. They're first mentioned in the Bible in Genesis chapter 2, verse 14, which is kind of a very early kind of mention of them. And then they're mentioned in over 130 verses in the Bible. Now, when Egypt had a lot of dealings with Israel, and these next few kingdoms are going to have quite a bit of dealings with them, especially Assyria and Babylon. So that's why there's quite a few more, you know, references to them. We can kind of divide their history up into three different sections. We have the Old Assyrian period, their founding, there's some debate, but about 2284 BC to 1391 BC was the Old Assyrian period, as they kind of begin to conquer and stuff and get an identity. Kind of a neat little thing there. There was a guy named Sargon the First, or Sargon of Akkad. That's how you say it. He is credited with having the first standing army in the world, and he ruled from 2270 to 2215 BC. So just kind of give you an idea about them. And I'm probably going to throw that fact back in when I finally get around to my lesson on warfare. The next is called the Middle Assyrian period in 1390 to 912 BC. And this is marked by a bunch of different kings beginning to conquer, a lot of battles, and they begin to slowly conquer and grow their influence and power. And really what we are more familiar with as Bible scholars, I guess, I won't call myself a Bible scholar, but as you know, people in the reading the Bible more familiar with is what historians would call the Neo-Assyrian Empire, which is 911 to 605 BC. It's at its height, it's its strongest. Had a bunch of various capitals through the years. This time had the capital of Nineveh. Its ruler, Tiglath-Pileser III. Boy, I'm bad with names and these. But anyway, that guy invaded the northern kingdom of Israel. Of course, you know, the kingdom split, Judah, the southern kingdom, and Israel, the northern kingdom, in 734. And basically that ends the history of the northern kingdom. They're basically forgotten to time almost after that. They did go down and besiege Jerusalem. God delivered them from them under the ruler at the time was named Sennacherib, and that's in 701 BC. And finally, kind of the end of the Assyrian empire is they're defeated by Babylon at the Battle of Carchemish in 605 BC. Okay, next kingdom that we'll deal with is Babylon. And the Babylon Empire is also kind of based in what's modern-day Iraq along the Euphrates River. It's a little south of Baghdad, and that's where it is. That's where Babylon, the city, is, and from which the empire grew out. It's first mentioned in 2 Kings chapter 17, verse 24. It's mentioned in over 260 verses. We can divide this out into about five time periods. The Old Babylonian period, 1894 to 911 BC. The first dynasty was founded by an Amorite chieftain named Sumu-Abum. Wouldn't you like your last name be Abum? Sumu-Abum. Another famous guy during this time is a guy you might have heard of in history class named Hammurabi. He reigned 1792 to 1750. He's famous because they dug up and found the code of Hammurabi. I think I'm saying that close. Which is kind of his codified laws and bears a lot of resemblance to, in some cases, to the Mosaic law and some of the punishments. Some of it's extremely harsh, but some of the eye for an eye, tooth for tooth kind of stuff is there. And that's when he fits in with the history of Babylon. Next period is the Assyrian period, which is 911 to 608 BC. And basically during this time, they're under Assyrian control and revolting against it. There's a lot of, you know, revolts and battles and stuff. And in fact, in 689 BC, Assyria goes down and basically just razes the town, razes and destroy the town. Walls, temple, palaces were just tore down and destroyed. And but that didn't stop Babylon. They kept on going and established the next period, the Neo-Babylonian Chaldean Empire. Yeah, mouthful. 612 to 539 BC. This is really what we were familiar with in context with the Bible. Nebuchadnezzar, also called Nebuchadnezzar II in history, 604 to 561 BC. And I believe that's his reign. I don't have it marked. I don't think that's his life. But anyway, that's where he comes in. Babylon goes down, destroys Jerusalem and the temple, 587 BC. And there are other interaction and invasions with Israel, or specifically Judah at this time, between now and then. But this begins the 70 years of Babylonian captivity of the Jews. Kind of the next little period in history is the Persian period, which I probably could have done one on the Persian Empire, but basically it's kind of a continuation. But the Medes and the Persians form an alliance and come in and conquer Babylon in 539 BC. By the way, Persian Empire, or Persian period, 539 to 331 BC. And so basically it is kind of like the old Babylonian Empire. It just kind of gets swallowed up and becomes part of the Persian Empire. It kind of becomes a province in the Persian Empire. Cyrus the Great, Darius, those guys. Daniel's actually lives into this reign of Cyrus and Darius. And this would be when the return to, when the captives, the Babylonian captivity ends and they're allowed to return. Ezra, Nehemiah, Esther, all that takes place in this period under the Persian rule specifically. But the Persian period we're talking about here is more like, you know, the history of Babylon under the Persians. And then last will be the Hellenistic period. This would be 331 to, we'll just say, 141 BC. Alexander the Great comes along, conquers Babylon like he does everywhere he goes, 331 BC. And then by 141 BC, the city is in ruins, it's desolate, and basically the city itself is not inhabited. You know, the name sticks around, the region's still known as Babylon, but the city itself of Babylon is pretty much gone to history by about 141 BC. And that's Babylon. Next, we have the Greek Empire, Greece. And the last two we're going to deal with, Greece and Rome, they're probably a lot more familiar to people. Used to be a lot more studied, their history. And if you're in college and stuff, you may still have to take a course on them. There's not a whole lot of courses on Babylonian history, but there could be a whole course on Greek history or Roman history or just portions of Greek or Roman history. As far as the modern world goes, a lot of the modern world is influenced by the Greeks and the Romans. But anyway, the Greeks, I thought about this, I was putting this together, you know, what's their major impact? Well, three things. The Greek language, which becomes kind of the default language in much of the world, thanks to Alexander the Great. Greek philosophy, very influential and even still today, it's kind of the birthplace of critical thinking and, not all of it's good in a biblical sense, but it kind of is, the modern mind, I guess you could say, the modern mindset, it really has its roots in Greek philosophy. And finally, the third biggest thing they gave us was Alexander the Great, because he has a lot to do with history, if you haven't already known by how many times his name comes up. First mention in the Bible of Greece, I believe, will be Daniel chapter 10, verse 20. It's not mentioned, but just a handful of times. And I believe that's actually a prophecy, if I remember right, about Alexander the Great. Time divisions, there's a lot of study, and I kind of went with the classical kind of thinking on the Greek history. Greek civilization has its basis on Crete, with a civilization called the Minoans, and this is about 270 to 1500 BC. For some reason, they leave, and there's a lot of mystery about all this, but some reason they leave Crete, go to the mainland, the kind of in modern Greece, and it kind of morphs into the Mycenaean civilization. This is 1900 to 1100 BC. And it's from that kind of roots that the Greeks come from. The next period is called the Dark Ages, and that's 1200 to 800 BC. One guy that fits in that period will be Homer, the poet, you know, author of the Iliad and the Odyssey. This is, you know, there's a lot of tribal type stuff going on during that time. There's not a lot known about it. And a lot of it's very legendary, and historians have a hard time really kind of piecing that time period together. From 800 to, we'll say 323 BC, we'll call it the period of the city-states. This is really kind of the classical Greece that we think of. And this is when the major philosophers would have been around. Sparta and Athens and Thebes, places like that, are come to power. The city-state, the Greek polis, comes into play. This isn't really a unified nation at this time. The Greeks are split up among different groups, all surrounded by, you know, you'd have a major city power like Athens, and it would control the region around it. And these little, these little city states dot the whole Greek and the Greece and the little islands and stuff. And a lot of our modern thought about the republic form of government and stuff comes from that city state. You can dig in so much into the history of this time period. Few things. Battle of Marathon, you know, kind of the base where Greeks versus the Persians. And why is that kind of interesting? I just like it because that's where the marathon comes from, because a messenger supposedly ran from the battlefield to deliver news and died after he ran his quote-unquote marathon. But anyway, that's where the marathon comes from, 490 BC. Xerxes, king of the Persians, invades Greece, 480 BC, and there's a lengthy battle between the Greeks and the Persians. The Battle of Thermopylae takes place, the 300 Spartans, and actually there was more than just 300 Spartans involved, but holding off the Greeks, holding off the Persians while everybody could regroup. There's a lot of very interesting stuff there, a lot of classic history. The Peloponnesian War, 431 to 404 BC, is when there's a lot of infighting. You call it a civil war. This is Athens versus Sparta, and all those little city-states are fighting against each other. And the kind of this period, it's kind of hard to date when this ends, but Alexander the Great, he lived, reigned from 336 to 323 BC. He's not necessarily from Greece. He's actually from Macedon, which is kind of north of Greece, but it's kind of a Greek heritage. They're actually kind of a little bit different. He's not like the same bloodline as the classic Greek person, but a lot of the Greek heritage and culture and stuff. And anyway, we kind of close out the period of the city-states because he comes in, conquers Greece, and most of the then-known world to the people there at that time, you know, all the way down into Egypt and Arabia and on into India. I mean, Ed, if he hadn't died, no telling how much further, you know. Earth may be called Alexander, you know, had he kept going. But that ushers in the next period, which we would call the Hellenistic period. And Hellenistic is kind of a term that's used to describe kind of Greek culture. At this time, the Greeks are not major players on the world, but kind of their culture is. The Greek philosophies are still popular. The Greek art is still popular. And the Greek language, as I say, is very widespread, thanks, and a lot of that thanks to Alexander the Great. But Greece itself is really just fallen into disrepair and is really nothing when it comes to world power. This will usher in the Roman period, 146 BC to 330 AD. The Romans actually had a lot of respect for the Greeks. They kind of hated it because they were so staunchly Roman and loved all things Roman, but there was this magnetism and draw with the Greek philosophy and stuff, so they were still fascinating. Plus, Greece was, you know, the legendary superpower, you know, all the stories and the legends come from there. Well, finally, after the Battle of Corinth in 146 BC, Rome is, you know, the Republic at the time is in control, and, you know, Greece kind of ceases to be an independent entity at that time. And that's what we'll cover for ancient Greece. Let's move on to, I think this would be my favorite, and that's Rome. Yes, classic Rome. If I start talking very dramatically and gazing off into the distance as I speak of the glories of Rome, you'll have to excuse me. I just do that sometimes, you know. Rome is awesome. Anyway, this is probably, you know, Egypt was a major player, but it was not a superpower for, you know, its existence. Rome established an empire that lasted just unreal how long, you know, it stayed in power. And, you know, its influence is still felt today. You know, some of its borders of its provinces are still borders of countries. And in fact, you can really make a case that, you know, pieces of the Roman Empire never were conquered or defeated, just kind of morphed into other things. And, you know, it kind of is still around today. You can make a case that it never really fell. It, you know, may have dissolved or whatever, but I mean, it's fascinating. Anyway, first mention of the Bible of Rome, Acts chapter 2, verse 10. You know, the New Testament takes place in a Roman world, but, you know, it's not a whole lot of talking about Rome this, Rome that, you know, but it's taking place in a Roman world, in the Roman Empire. And time divisions of Rome. Rome supposedly began with two brothers, Romulus and Remus, who were cast out, raised by a she-wolf, and eventually become kings. And Romulus kills Remus. That's why it's called Rome instead of Reme. It's because Romulus killed Remus. And that ushered in a period. That's the legend. Did it really begin that way? Probably not. But that's the legendary, and it makes for good history, you know. Kind of sounds like the Jungle Book, you know, Mowgli being raised by wolves. Well, that's what Romulus was. Anyway, the first period of monarchy, there was kings, despots, you could say, in charge, tyrants, 753 to 509 BC. The last of those was Tarquin, and he is finally deposed in 509 BC, and he's the last of the monarchs. And from then on, Rome hated kings and refused to have one themselves. They hated the word rex, you know, which was Latin for king. You know, no Roman in his right mind would ever take the name rex or anything, you know. So anyway, that ushered in the period known as the Republic, the Roman Republic, 509 to 27 BC. And it really is kind of, we could date that in there a little bit differently. This is kind of the classic Rome, you know, of senators and the temples being built and the austere, you know, disciplined Roman. A few things that happened, the Punic Wars, the wars against Carthage took place in this time, 264 to 146 BC. Hannibal takes place. Fascinating history there. I like reading about Hannibal and all his stuff. kind of the downfall of the Roman, the Republic really was coming apart, it seems. Dictators like Sulla and was it Cinna were, you know, really tearing it apart. And the guy who finally just did away with it, you might have heard of him. His name was Julius Caesar, lived from 100 to 44 BC, kind of helped end the Republic. He's a major player in the last days through the triumvirate, him and Pompey and Crassus kind of agreeing to share power. And Crassus gets killed, and him and Pompey basically go at war each other, and Julius Caesar crosses the Rubicon with an army, which was illegal, and, you know, takes control, defeats Pompey, and goes on to, you know, really, you could say he's the first emperor, doesn't have the title, he's basically ruling as a dictator, as, you know, sole power, but, I mean, here I am rambling about Roman history, but he is basically one-man rule, just giving kind of appearance, and, you know, that everything's still in place, and the Senate's, you know, still has power, but he's, yeah, basically ruling, and he's assassinated, and anyway, to backtrack a little bit in history from that, where does Rome fit in with Jewish history? Well, in 63 BC, Pompey the Great goes down and gets involved in a little bit of a struggle with the Hasmonean kings and basically steps in and says, yeah, I'll help you, and takes control. He actually helped in a siege of Jerusalem, took over. In fact, he actually entered the temple. The last holdouts were, I believe, were there at the temple, which is basically the way any siege takes place of Jerusalem. And basically, he rides his horse, supposedly, into the holy place, into the Holy of Holies. I mean, he goes in, desecrates the temple by his very presence, and then leaves. But that's the start of Roman control. Basically, you know, any Jewish Hasmonean leaders at the time were at the mercy of Rome. This leads to Herod the Great coming into power through his connections with Mark Antony and Pompey and stuff, and kind of sets up for Roman control of Judea. It's not like Rome came in with an army and conquered it. They, you know, just kind of stepped in at the right time and took control. The Roman Empire itself, the date I'm going to use is 27 BC, and you want to talk about when did the empire end, when it split east-west, but kind of the consensus historical date is 1453 BC, but anyway, or AD, excuse me, 1453 AD. We'll just throw that out there. We're not going near that far in history in this lesson anyway. But in 27 BC is when Octavian, who's Julius Caesar's heir, who will take the name Augustus, which is what history remembers him by. He officially becomes imperator, the emperor. And, this sets up, the emperors, from Caligula and Claudius and Nero. And, I mean, all that stuff is set up and in place and carries on for centuries. Another important thing as far as Rome's relation to Israel is the Jewish revolt, 66 to 70 AD, which I keep talking about that, but basically it's been a rocky relationship the whole time, pretty much between Rome and Israel or Judea. But finally, full-fledged revolt comes out. Vespasian goes down, and very bloodily and very mercilessly, ends the revolt by killing a bunch of people, enslaving a bunch of people, and destroying a bunch of stuff. At the end of this, 70 AD is when the temple is destroyed and Jerusalem falls. There's a few holdouts like Masada, a few fortresses that hold out a little bit longer, but basically the revolt is done when Jerusalem falls. And which is not the final Jewish revolt, it's actually a couple more. But anyway, we're not going any further into that. That's basically as far as biblical history is concerned. I kind of consider that kind of the end of biblical history. You go, the time, John John the Apostle lived probably up to about 100 AD or so. So you could say, well, we could go up that far, and you can, but really by that time, you're really kind of, it's really kind of the early church stage. It's not so much, you know, an apostolic age, even though he's still around. So anyway, I kind of consider the New Testament age closed out by about 70 AD. So anyway, that's just a brief 45-minute overview of a few of the major or interesting, I guess, since I throw in the Hittites, some of the major powers that Israel comes into play with throughout their history, in Bible times. So I hope that's been interesting to you and helpful, maybe to help you understand how history fits in with the Bible. Boy, it's fascinating stuff. And did I just hit the tip of the iceberg? Oh yes. When I dealt with all this, if you just get on Wikipedia and just start digging through some of this stuff, I mean, most of the information I have here came straight off of Wikipedia. I'm just be honest about that. I took a bunch of dates and stuff about a lot of these groups just straight out of Wikipedia. But just get on there and go to digging through this stuff. And there's multiple articles on Egypt and Rome and Greece. And, you know, even I was surprised there was a bunch of stuff on the Assyrians, about their military and their culture. I mean, there is just, boy, there's tons of stuff out there. So, if nothing else, get in, dig around, and do some in-depth study, because there's a lot of neat stuff on these ancient civilizations. So, anyway, that's it. Let's wrap it up. I'm Matthew Gage. Check out BaptistBasics.org for other resources. Hopefully it won't be too long until I get you the next lesson, which I have no idea what I'm going to do in it. Right now it is, according to my outline, going to be on languages and literature. I may change that. I don't know. But I'll probably stick with that. But anyway, stick around. I might surprise you with one next time. Email me, podcast@BaptistBasics.org. You can follow BaptistBasics.org on Facebook. Love to hear from you if you get a chance. Anyway, that's it. I'm Matthew Gage. I appreciate you listening today. I hope it's been a help and a blessing to you.